the War Room. It's Quinn in the Morning, melting snowflakes since 1993. By the way, those of you who are about to buy your Giza Dream Sheets from Mike Lindell, just so you know, it's a BOGO. Buy one, get one set free. And the promo code is Rose, R-O-S-E. And speaking of Rose, she has a podcast now. You can get it at Spotify or all the other platforms. And she just did one with Kirk Schlichter, which is really good, and because he's hilarious. And then the one with Ted Nugent is entitled Mother Teresa with a Glock. So look for that one. In the meantime, on the phone this morning, I have Matt Rosenberg. He has written a book. Good morning, Matt. Welcome to the show, by the way.
Thank you, Jim. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here. You've written a book called What Next, Chicago? Notes of a Pissed Off Son. And, you know, I've been watching Chicago for a while now, and I can understand why you're ticked off.
There's a lot to be concerned about. Murders are up 55% over 2 years ago, even up slightly from last year when Chicago and the whole country went crazy. Young men are out of control. The courts are broken. The schools are failing. We've got endemic corruption and rigged rules of governance. It's a stiff situation. There are some rays of light, and part of what I did was go down deep into the South Side to meet with people and organizations who are actually battling this tide of decay, and that becomes more important in times like this.
Well, you're right, because what's happening in Chicago is the direct result of policy. And, you know, and people keep voting for the same people over and over again because they don't connect the policy to the outcome. But if you look around the country at the blue cities, and most of them are blue, the outcomes all seem to be pretty much the same.
It's a disturbing pattern, Jim, and you hit it right on the head. Myself, I call myself a cantankerous independent. But there's just no way around it. We've seen this unfold over the years in Chicago, in places like St. Louis, Cleveland, New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Minneapolis in particular. There's a whole host of policies. There's ways of dealing with criminals and crime, or more specifically, not dealing with them. There's something called bail reform.
Yeah.
And you know all about that. And that has really turned into a giant 900-pound hairball here in Chicago. We've got guys who are let out on low cash or no cash bail after, you know, committing violent crimes or after gun law violations, which our prosecuting attorney does not think is a serious type of crime. And all too often they go right back out before their trial and do some more bad stuff, whether it's carjacking, shooting, killing, armed robberies. So bail reform is a big problem. We've got a sustained attack on expanding education choice in our K-12 public schools. It extends even to the governor's office. We've got a cap on charter school growth. We've got a moratorium on the closure of failing schools in Chicago. And, you know, the list goes on. Then when you get to when we have our elections, we've got sort of de facto voter suppression in Chicago, hiding the elections in the odd numbered years and the odd early months of the year, so that basically only public employee union members come out to vote, because, of course, they're motivated, Jim, by their pension benefits.
Well,
right?
Sure they are.
You know, and it sounds like I'm just spitting this stuff out, but the numbers are there. We're looking at $170 billion worth of accumulated pension debt in Chicago over the next several decades. The state, according to Moody's earlier this year, the state's accumulated debt now for public employee pensions exceeds $300 billion with a B, you know?
Well, you know, and they can't they can't do anything about it because they put it into their constitution. And so the courts have said, you can't not pay this. You put it in your constitution. It's not just the law. It's a constitutional right now.
That's a very serious part of our problem here. There are pathways out of it, but there would have to be a vote on a constitutional amendment. And if that did not succeed, and it probably wouldn't, you're going to have to do some tough things in the city of Chicago, raise taxes to pay off the large pension debt over the next 20 years, and totally restructure the city budget so that we decrease the size of our workforce, outsource a lot of stuff, sell off some infrastructure, all the things that progressives hate. But if we don't do those things, the city will continue to die. The crime, the high taxes, people are moving out. The population is staying steady because Latinos and Asians are moving in, but whites and blacks are moving out. Now, maybe in the end, that's not so bad. We'll be a high crime city that's with high taxes, that's majority Latino and Asian. I'm not saying that's the end of the world, but these conditions cannot be allowed to continue. So what happens to change it? I think sort of a bottom-up groundswell is the only way this is going to happen.
Yeah, and I, you know, somehow I don't see that happening because I, you know, if any Democrat were to vote for this constitutional amendment that you talked about, they'd have to hire somebody to start their car, you know. In the meantime, you've got people like Kim Fox. The only reason that she's where she is because George Soros paid to get her there, like he did in so many other cities. But she's not there to enforce the law. She's not there for justice. She's there to implement social justice, which is revenge under color of law.
Well, and, you know, you've got people who know better, but they keep reelecting the politicians that are doing this to them, and then people wring their hands in despair. So there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance here. We see the cause of what's going on in front of us. There is something that tends to get swept away a little bit, which is the role of, you know, the home environment and parents. I think we have a very serious problem with our institutional structure of government, with our prosecutors, with our chief judge, Tim Evans, who's the actual architect of bail reform. But, you know, we got to look at the young men running off the rails. And one thing that I do in my book is dig in deep and find examples of people who turn their life around, also of churches and nonprofits in some of these hard-bitten communities on the south and west sides that are stepping up. There's, for instance, a training program from which graduated this summer 18 black female electricians, fully qualified and certified. You know, that kind of thing is fantastic. There's an effort underway by a nonprofit in the Woodlawn neighborhood to raise $20 million for a new community center that would be studded with more job training facilities for auto mechanics, for construction industry workers. So there are these points of light, and I guess maybe in the end, perhaps this bottom-up groundswell can start if we don't look to politicians to lead the way, because the leadership class is distracted and, you know, wreaking havoc, really, upon the city and its populace. It's got the people have to be the light in the end is how I'm beginning to see it.
Well, I'm wondering how many people understand that we live in a country where that's unique in that all power is vested in the individual. The organizing principle of the country is the individual. Sometimes I think they've been talked out of the idea that they actually have any power, especially if they belong to some preferred group. You know, in order to belong to the group, you have to give up your power to the group. And follow along with the group and not think for yourself. And our schools certainly aren't teaching kids to think for themselves.
That's actually a pretty astute analysis, Jim. And I think that it cuts across both our endemic corruption here, where there's been sort of an insiderism. It used to be the Poles and the Italians and the Irish, of course, you know, who ran the Chicago Democratic political machine. And over time, the tides shifted, but too many black and Latino elected office holders here basically opted for that old school white ethnic political insiderism and corruption. And considering the needs of their communities, that's just been a huge strategic error. And in the schools, you're quite right. There's this, you know, a fealty towards something called diversity, But when it comes to diversity of thought, that goes right out the window, you know, and you can't talk about the role of the individual. You can't talk about bootstrapping because that's white supremacism. But when I went into the South Side and talked to black people, I heard stories of bootstrapping over and over and over again, you know, and it's just remarkable what people can do, even coming from a position at first of disadvantage. I heard some awfully inspiring stories, and those are part of what I'm trying to put across in my book, What Next Chicago. People have to be the light. I keep coming back to that.
Well, and the problem here is also with the media. Maybe it was H.L. Mencken who said that the media looks at the world like a man in a closet looks at the closet with a flashlight. It only sees what only exists is what it's shining on. And the thing is, if you go into the black community and you ask people their positions and attitudes, you're going to find out it's way, way different from blacks, how they're portrayed in the media. They're portrayed as angry and hating America and all that stuff, and you know, anti-gun and anti-police and all that. You go into the hood, you find out that's not the truth. But we never see those people.
Correct. You know, things glimmer to the surface, but then a reporter has to go in and expend some shoe leather to learn more. And in the summer of 2020, something did manage to trickle out that caught my attention, and I went down and talked to Daryl Smith later as a result. In the summer of 2020, Black Lives Matter protesters came down into a very tough South Side neighborhood called Englewood to the police station to protest in favor of defunding the police. And Daryl is a 51-year-old black man, and he and his pals from Englewood showed up too, and they said, no, you should really leave here. We don't want to defund police. We want better police, but we want more police. Well, I made a note of all that, and that video went sort of viral in that crazy summer of 2020. I went down in the fall of 2020 to meet with Daryl and sit in his backyard and talk to him, and he talked about it a lot, and so did Latasha Fields, a 40-something black woman who with her husband is raising four children in the Washington Heights neighborhood. They both told me, listen, you know, it's not just about when a white cop kills a young black man. It's about when young black men are killing each other. And the problem in Chicago, unfortunately, is that for all the chanting and shouting of Black Lives Matter, too often black lives seem not to matter, and they especially don't matter to white progressives who never set foot on the South Side or the West Side. So the hard part is, and there's a scholar, a very wise man who I had a chance to listen to and learn from toward the end of 2020, a man named Shelby Steele.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Who, you know, and he's a pillar of kind of a clarity of thought. He wrote a book in 2005 that I highly recommend called White Guilt. You're probably familiar with the premise.
Yep.
And he said last winter, listen, I know white people are for real. If they're asking something of black people, if they're asking that we change things, we do things differently, we do things better in our own communities and in our own homes so that we can address some of these problems that exist around crime, around educational attainment and achievement, around family formation and family cohesion, all of these things that are so essential. He said, if white people just come in and talk to us about how oppressed we have been and how rotten things still are, then they are just trying to use us and
yep.
ease their own, you know, salve their own white guilt. And that, unfortunately, is the MO these days for about, you know, 70 to 90% of white people. They can't get past it. And in my book, I talk about the absolutely serious systemic racism that did exist in Chicago against blacks from whites in the 20th century. Let's not pussyfoot around it. There were all kinds of, you know, and there are still vestiges of anti-black white racism today in Chicago. And I described meeting a troglodyte fellow in the fall of 2020. In the neighborhood of Bridgeport, I moved into the place where all the Irish mayors came from, five of them. I moved in. There wasn't too much gunfire at night, just a little, and it was really a pretty cool, vibrant place. and it was close to the South Side, but I ran into a guy, you know, who was from the Stone Age, and I tried everything. I tried the Socratic method. I tried the head-on approach. It didn't work. So, point being, those guys are still out there, but does that control your reality or not?
No, of course not. But they'd like us to believe that that's emblematic of where we are. You talked about Black Lives Matter, which is a fundamentally Marxist organization using race instead of class to implement Marxism. One of the things that they're very big on is getting rid of the nuclear family. For 100 years, Karl Marx was pushing getting rid of the nuclear family, and the Great Society was the beginning of that, because as Larry Elder has said so often, black women were encouraged to marry the government. And I'm sorry, mm-hmm. but, you know, the check replaces dad at the head of the table. The check doesn't play catch with the kid. The kid goes looking for a father figure, and you know where he ends up? He ends up in a gang.
And there is an alderman here in Chicago who is calling out our race-baiting mayor, Lori Lightfoot, she explains everything in terms of systemic racism, when the real problem is really systemic misrule by an urban political elite that is now a majority of color. Our city council is a majority of color. Our mayor, our prosecuting attorney, and our chief judge are all of color. But Alderman Ray Lopez himself, and he is, as I understand it, he is a Democrat. He happens to be gay. He's Latino. And he has said, listen, Lightfoot has it all wrong. It is not systemic racism that is the source of our problem here in Chicago. It is the borderline breakdown of the nuclear family. And it's like, boom, there.
Yep.
He said it.
It's systemic stupid. We have systemic stupid, you know, and we really do. I mean, look at our schools. You talked about, I mean, we've had several generations now of the teachers union monopoly. And what has it produced? It's produced emotional learning, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Equity is not a word that ascribes to the American experience. Equity is everybody finishes together.
And you know, it's. I think it's important that you bring up the concept of equity. I had kind of a brain flash around that in the course of researching and writing this book. And
I've only got about a minute, so go for it.
Yeah. Well, equity has to be earned, is my real point.
Right.
It can't be passed out like a door prize. Yeah, you can get a home equity loan, but for it to do any good, you've got to pay it back, right?
Exactly.
So that's my feeling about this. So if people want to find the book, Jim, they can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's online only. And at either of these bookstore sites online, they can just enter What Next Chicago, and they'll find my book. And I hope that people read it and then reach out to me. My email address is in the back.
Okay, and it doesn't just apply to Chicago. It applies to all cities ultimately, because it's all the same policies creating the same outcomes. It has been an absolute pleasure, Matt. Let us know how the book's doing, okay?
I absolutely will. Thanks for the chance to talk with you, Jim. I really appreciate it.
All right, good morning, and have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.